A number of activists along Troost Avenue say it's time to stop relying on others to fix their neighborhoods. It's time to take ownership, they say, over their own problems. A new documentary about how local residents are overcoming the perception of poverty and racial strife that surrounds the city divider is premiering this weekend at Screenland Crossroads. It's called We Are Superman. And joining us now is the film's director, Kevin Bryce. Kevin, welcome and congratulations. It's a great film.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Stephen.
We're also joined by two people featured prominently in the film, Carol Grimaldi. She's executive director at Brush Creek Community Partners. Carol, welcome.
Thank you.
And Rodney Dott, he's executive director of Re-Engage Incorporated. Rodney, welcome to Up to Date.
Thank you.
Allow me to set the stage here and say that this studio is an appropriate place to have this conversation as we're right here on Troost Avenue, the subject of this film. Carol, let me begin with you to complete this sentence. Troost Avenue is viewed as
a place you do not want to be or cross.
Rodney, complete this sentence. Troost Avenue is
Troost Avenue is historically the racial and economic divide in Kansas City. Troost Avenue is what I have always characterized as a demilitarized zone. It's some place you just, as Carol stated, you don't go to.
Let's talk about the center of this documentary, which is the 31st and Troost area. Kevin, I'd like to talk about the history of that intersection. Tell us about 31st and Troost in the 1920s.
Well, the 1920s through the 40s were really kind of a boom time. And I've learned all this really from making the documentary and talking to these people who are right here beside me. It was, if you weren't going downtown, you were going to 31st and Troost. It was the place to be. It was the place to get your groceries, to get whatever you needed. It was the place to go.
What else would you find around 31st and Troost? Groceries? What kind of stores were at 31st and Troost? Rodney?
Your major department stores all had locations there. Jones was there. JCPenney's was there. It was actually a very affluent neighborhood during that period. There were a lot of locally owned businesses, and a lot of wealthy folks lived along Troost or just off of Troost.
Well, maybe we should step back for a moment and talk about how that land became prime real estate in its day, Millionaires Row, and this business district. What did it look like back then?
This is going back to the 19th century. The land was essentially divided up into large homesteads, large acreage, and it was just that, Millionaire's Row. There was a huge plantation right there at 31st and Troost that kind of surrounded the whole area.
And I noticed something really interesting in one of the pictures of 31st and Troost in its heyday. Almost all of the people were white. And I guess the big question is, what happened? That's a really big question, obviously, today. What happened that changed that?
When the laws were changed that allowed African Americans to live beyond a very defined area in Kansas City and to be able to work and shop outside this area, they started moving out, and they moved west and they moved south. And what happened as a consequence of that, and this is a fairly recent change too, we had real estate agents knocking on the doors of our neighborhoods east of Troost Avenue and saying, you better sell your home now while it has some value because black people are moving in and it's going to lose its value. And people left.
Blockbusting.
Yes.
There's a certain developer of this town, well-known man, J.C. Nichols, developed the Country Club Plaza, but he also had a role in this. What was his role in this, Rodney?
Well, he basically created what's known as neighborhood covenants, which means that if you bought a home in a certain neighborhood, you were not allowed to sell that home to a minority. Back then, even Jewish people were included in that. So that if you bought a home in this neighborhood, you were confined to selling it to just other white Anglo-Saxon Protestants.
Mm. In fact, I bought a home recently not so far from here, and I was really interested in the neighborhood association, and I looked back into the Kansas City Library archives, and sure enough, there it was written in there, you know, people shall not sell their houses to anybody but white people. But it wasn't until when that – I mean, these racial covenants obviously were outlawed in the 1960s Civil Rights Act. But when were these racial covenants actually technically removed from
In the last several years, in some cases, right. The Star did, a pretty good job of going back and saying even though they are not enforced, they are still on the books. Congressman Cleaver took action in Congress to do what he could to strike them down at that level. And I think there still are a few pockets of Kansas City that still have them on the books, but they are unenforceable.
Hmm. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. I'm Steven Steigman. Steve Kraske is away. We are talking about We Are Superman, a documentary about Troost Avenue, specifically the 31st and Troost area. We've spent some time talking about what 31st and Troost looked like back in the 1920s, 30s, and 40s. What does 31st and Troost look like today for those who don't drive down it? Rodney, you want to answer that question?
Well, unfortunately, because of the blockbusting, the redlining, and all of those racial components that we just discussed, Troost has been the recipient of disinvestment. Everyone has moved west of Troost or north of the river and pretty much have left Troost to its own devices. Unfortunately, when you combine poverty, lack of hope, a terrible education system, then you're going to have problems. You're going to have neighborhoods that are not sustainable.
Hmm. There's been a recent revitalization of that of certain buildings along that intersection. Quite nice, actually. What's in those buildings right now, Carol?
I think I need a little more specificity as to the buildings you're
talking
about.
As you're driving north on Troost, mm-hmm. and you cross over the intersection of 31st and Troost, you look to your left and your right, some white limestone, I believe limestone front buildings. Anyone can jump in here if you'd like and describe what we're seeing there now.
A lot of the kind of the exterior beautification of that particular area is pioneered by Troost folks.
Mm-hmm.
The mural that you see there,
mm-hmm.
the trees that have been planted. There's a new drainage system along the sidewalks.
Mm-hmm.
That sort of thing. There's a community of people that meet on Thursday nights, and they kind of commission these sorts of things to try to simply beautify the area.
Where are they getting the funding for this?
They're getting the funding privately within themselves and with private donations. I don't know if anyone can speak to that.
Well, I think I don't know about that private effort, but we've also had Troost Max, the bus rapid transit system, which did a lot to improve the infrastructure along there, put in the rain gardens. And with the BRT project, there were three locations along Troost, way far south and down to 31st Street, that were selected as sites for some public art components that I think really add a lot to the area and have people thinking differently about it. And just the bus stations themselves, I think, are quite remarkable.
Hmm. We asked this question on KCUR's Facebook page. We asked people to complete the sentence, Troost Avenue is, and we've received a couple of responses. Michael writes, Troost Avenue is a tremendous opportunity for the local neighborhoods on Troost and the greater metro area to build genuine community that is designed and made to transcend present boundaries of race, ethnicity, economics, and social class. Beckett writes, Troost Avenue is famous for the wrong reasons. Rodney, you used the phrase a few minutes ago, disinvestment. Let's talk about disinvestment. What is it and what happened in the last 40 to 50 years?
Well, basically, as Carol indicated, with integration, while it has been good, it also has some negative connotations in the sense of, during segregation, folks in these neighborhoods had to trade with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And so you had black doctors, you had black business folks, and they had their built-in customer base. So that created and generated a lot of wealth within the community. But once folks were able to shop and live wherever they wanted, then what happens was that those who were able to leave left. And so what that left was those who had more difficulties, more obstacles. And in a case like that, when you have just a group of folks who are impoverished, poorly educated, then you're gonna have some problems. And when you connect that with the powers that be wanting to invest where there's growth, where there is economic incentives, then you're going to get disinvestment. You know, the money is going to follow the money. It's going to follow the people who have money.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I hear about Troost all the time is that, or east of Troost, is that the folks there cannot support economic development in the sense of the merchants don't want to come there because there's not enough disposable income to make it worthwhile, along with the other problems that you're going to face, increased security, higher insurance, things like that. And so what that has caused to happen is the private investment has left.
Mm-hmm. And it's a cyclical thing. If you don't have any investment, there's not going to be more investment. And okay, I see how it goes. 816-235-2888. 816-235-2888 is our number. You can also email us. Our email address is uptodate@kcur.org. You can also visit KCUR's Facebook page or tweet us. We are at KCUR UpToDate. One of the subjects of this documentary is CCO, creating Communities Creating Opportunity, and their initiative to cap payday loan interest rates. Let's spend a few minutes talking about that. Kevin, what's happened?
Well, what they were doing was they were their goal was to get a question on the ballot, the 2012 November ballot,
mm-hmm.
asking people should they put a cap on payday loan interest rates. Currently, the cap is at 1,950%.
Wait, whoa, whoa. 1,950%.
Yeah, it's almost
– It's APR, right?
Yeah.
Okay, I just want to make sure.
Essentially, it's inconceivable as an interest rate. Now, the average is somewhere around 450%, which is still outrageous.
Yeah.
So they were basically gathering signatures all year and for the past couple of years to cap the rate at 36%, which 36 is actually still pretty high, but that was the number they came up with.
So what came about?
They gathered roughly 110,000 more signatures than they needed.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, tens of thousands of those signatures were disqualified. Essentially because for reasons of illegible, addresses had changed, people had moved.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of – it seems a little fishy as to why all of these signatures were disqualified.
So it knocked it off the ballot. Let's step back for just a moment and talk about payday loan stores. One of the biggest corporations, QC Holdings, Quick Cash is based in Overland Park. What services do these payday loan companies offer, and why do they charge such excessively high rates? Carol?
Well, they offer the easy opportunity for cash for people to be able to take a check and cash that check and at 30%, they get 30% of the check value. The opportunity to get a loan. You can sign to let them take your car if you don't pay back that loan, which mm-hmm. is probably one of the more insidious.
A title loan, yeah.
A title loan, yes, thank you. But as Kevin was saying, you can get a loan at a great, great cost, or you can get cash that is your own, but they keep a huge part of that too. But it's very easy access. And they tend to be in neighborhoods where you do not have a great deal of opportunity or access to traditional financial services.
Where have those traditional financial services gone, Rodney?
That's part of that disinvestment that we were speaking of earlier. As folks began to leave the urban core, the banks followed them. As banks began to merge and come together, they began to close the neighborhood local branches. And so what happened was the payday industry came to legislatures, state legislatures, and now federal, saying, hey, the banks have left. These folks still need financial services. Let us come in. Now, the thing you have to understand is that they're high risk.
Sure.
So we're going to need a very exorbitant rate of interest to make up for their high risk. And so they came in with these what is known as usury laws and tore them up and said, you know what, these folks, we're going to give them money, but they're going to pay a ridiculous price for it. And so with disinvestment, what happens is predatory lenders come in. And that's what has really devastated. The thing we have to remember is that we're talking about an area that is not having any resources, but yet the payday loan industry, the title loan industry, makes $26 million annually from these communities.
Wow.
That's $26 million of profit. That's not even the principles.
Wow. Well, let's take a break. We'll come when we come back. We'll continue our conversation about We Are Superman, the documentary about truce. We'll also take phone calls from Ruth Ann and Chris. And a little bit later in the hour, we'll preview an investigative series coming up next week. I'm Steven Seigman, in for Steve Kraske. You're listening to Up to Date on KCUR. Welcome back to Up to Date. I'm Steven Steigman. If you missed yesterday's conversation about the Gay Dad Project, you'll find it in all of our previous broadcasts as well as our weekend to-do list at kcur.org. On Monday's program, we're partnering with Harvest Public Media for a look at the cattle industry as part of the series America's Big Beef. This hour, we're talking about We Are Superman, a documentary about 31st and Troost and Troost overall. We're joined by three guests here. Carol Grimaldi, she's executive director at Brush Creek Community Partners. Kevin Bryce is the director of the film We Are Superman. And Rodney, Rodney Knott is executive director of Reengage Incorporated. Rodney, I want to talk with you about the Man Project. What is the Man, the Man Class?
The Man Class is a 12-session curriculum that I developed with a group of psychologists here at the university, as a matter of fact. Dr. Lynette Barnes was part of that effort, who's in the counseling department here. And it's basically the lessons that a father would teach his son. One of the things that I researched when I was putting together the Man Class was that the horrendous success rates of children from fatherless homes. 78% of high school dropouts, fatherless homes. 75% of men incarcerated and juveniles in detention, fatherless homes. 80% of kids in drug rehab, fatherless homes. And so the statistics were just horrific. And so I got to realizing that we need to address this absence of manhood in our community. And that's sort of where the class got its start.
How many people have taken part in the class?
Well, we are currently in Kansas City as well as in St. Louis. And I would say between the two cities, probably a little over 150 maybe.
Wow. You talk a lot about responsibility in the Man Class.
Yes.
Tell us about that.
Well, we basically start out with four affirmations, which is based on the Superman principle, which we developed. And it was basically, today, I will not participate in my own destruction. Today, I will be unafraid to be great. Today, I will have a vision for my life. And today, I will nurture those around me. And we start each class that way because, unfortunately, too often these men have participated in this process to their own demise.
Let's talk about fatherhood again and what happens when individuals don't grow up with role models. You're trying to change that, are you going deeper? Are you trying to are you talking with your class participants about fatherhood and responsibility as it relates to? I mean, how many of the people taking part in the class are fathers but not wed to their children's mothers?
Probably about 85%. Unfortunately, this has been a growing trend since the 60s. Right now, over 70% of the children born to African Americans are born out of wedlock without fathers.
You make an interesting statement in the film about that there are more African Americans with two-parent families during slavery than there are now. And that might strike some as, you know, some maybe think that you're saying, let's return to those great old times of slavery. But you're not saying that. What are you saying?
No. Slavery was a horrific institution, and I would never condone that. However, what I think is important, and I think what gets missed whenever that statistic is brought up, is that what it says is that it says that we've gone so far from what has clearly been designed as the most stable environment to raise children. The family is the backbone of our society. Unfortunately, that backbone has been damaged severely in our community. And unless we begin to address that, one of the things that I share is that we're born male and female, but we learn how to be men and women. And if there's no one there to teach you, then how do you learn? And what happens is that as a child, you have to guess. And if as a child I guess wrong, it has lifelong consequences. If as a child I guess that I can drop out of school, well, now I've condemned myself to a life of poverty because the high school diploma is the minimum that you need. If as a child I guess that it's okay to go for the quick money of selling drugs, well, now I've condemned myself to a life of poverty because the one group you can discriminate with impunity is ex-felons. No one argues with that. And so now I've taken myself out of student loans, out of any type of support. As a society, we decided a long time ago that men were not, they didn't need support. That women and children, we were going to take care of them, but men, you're on your own. And that has not worked out very well for us. As the statistics prove.
Well, let's talk about some of your students profiled in the film. One has spent time in and out of prison, and he's working on his bachelor's degree. Tell me about him. I can't remember his name. I'm sorry.
Bobby Thompson.
Bobby.
Yes. Bobby did participate in the program. He had some really big obstacles to overcome.
Mm-hmm.
One of the difficulties that I have found is that when you reach out to these men and you provide them with this new information, if you don't support them during this process, what happens is that environment brings them back.
Mm-hmm.
Because these folks are saying to them, who do you think you are to go to college? Who do you think you are to get out of this? You know, unfortunately, we have this attitude whenever someone tries to move out, others come in and grab them and try to keep them from moving.
We asked this question at the beginning of the show and on our Facebook page, complete the sentence, Troost Avenue is, and Robin writes, Troost Avenue is my home. Pat writes, Troost Avenue is where my mother and I took the bus or trolley, whichever was operating at the time, to shop at the 31st Street stores you've mentioned, and when we didn't want to go all the way downtown. There was a big Cat's drugstore, too. I remember going to the Isis Theater with my friend as a young teen. Let's say hi to Ruth Ann in Kansas City, Missouri. Ruth Ann, thanks for holding on for such a long time.
You're welcome. And hey, Carol.
Hey.
I know you. Carol and the rest of you, what a good program. I'd like to say that, quickly, I guess, Troost was not the dividing line during the Dust Bowl days, but Paseo possibly was. So that made a huge, beautiful, complex place to grow up. Nobody was a stranger. We had the streetcar, which took me for all over the place when I was a kid, just a kid, for a nickel. And I'd like to say that somebody should get behind the name of Sunny Slope, which is what our neighborhood was called. Beautiful name. and with beautiful appurtenances around. I don't know. It was a good time, despite the horrible times of the economy and the fit and the physical conditions.
Ruth Ann, I appreciate your call today. Ruth Ann brought up an interesting point, which was that back then the dividing line was the Paseo. If in 10, 15, 20, 30 years we eliminate Troost as that historic dividing line of class and race, will there be another dividing line further east or someplace else? Is there always – does there have to be a dividing line? Carol?
I don't know that I want to say there has to be a dividing line. I think it will take an awful lot for us to not divide ourselves, though, and it wounds me. I think if you watch the film tonight or this weekend, that you will hear a couple of people, Anita Maltbia in particular, talking about what Troost was and her life as an African-American girl growing up in the community and the kinds of things that Ruth Ann just talked about.
Hmm. Let's take a call from Chris in Kansas City, Missouri. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi. I'm thankful for the topic. We have six properties between the area you're talking, 31st and Troost, and just about Armour and Troost. And we've been in the area since 1985. And at the time, I was the only Caucasian to move east of Troost into a large commercial structure. And people thought I was crazy, but I loved the architecture. Over the decades, we put hundreds of thousands of dollars into that area and are directly responsible for rehab of many of those houses and the new structures that are on Forest. And I really think you're not getting an accurate picture with this show. I really want to update you with it. In our neighborhood now for the last 5 years, at 33rd and Troost, it's completely integrated. We have all ages, all races, all educational levels. We have young white couples pushing their babies. We have runners. We have bicyclists. Unless you have person-on-person violence who knows somebody and they're engaged in some kind of activity, it's a very safe neighborhood. The very biggest problem we have, singularly, is the city. We do not get equal protection under the law. As businesses, we have caught people who have stripped over $200,000 worth of inventory red-handed, who were caught. The police department got their confessions, and then no prosecution. You know, if I went out and shoplifted a DVD from Walmart, I could spend 6 months in jail. The city, in terms of code enforcement, just doesn't work with this. I complained about a building for 10 years that collapsed one day while I was on the phone. I watched a man killed, and the city had ignored it. The biggest obstacle we have over there is this city. They do not support us. They do not give us equal protection. And they treat the business owners with a kind of a contempt, as if somehow we're part of some criminal activity over there. In fact, we hold people to the highest standards. And every single person who works with us in our businesses is from the immediate neighborhood. Mm. So I think you really need to readjust your view of Troost. And I think propagating the idea that it's highly segregated and that it's completely blighted is not an accurate one today. If we had not lost all that inventory, if we had regained it, if they'd prosecuted, you'd see a whole block that had been redone. It's not now redone because we get no support from our government. They've kind of just left us out there, and not just left us out there, they've made it difficult for us.
Chris, I'm going to have to cut you off there for time reasons, but I want our guest to respond to your call. What about what Chris says?
He's right on all counts.
Is the city not providing the services it should be providing to this area?
Well, I think just like anything else, it takes time. You can't have a location that has been disinvested in, and then all of a sudden overnight, the attitudes are going to change. This thing, while Chris is right, I think we need to keep in mind, though, that this is not a problem that's going to be solved overnight.
Right.
It didn't get started overnight. It's not going to be fixed overnight. While there are pockets that are really flourishing, and we love that, and that's what gives me the hope every morning to wake up, we've still got to look at the larger picture and not lose sight of that. While, again, these pockets are great, I don't want us to focus so much on those and lose track of this larger picture that there's a lot of work that needs to be done.
Hmm. And one of the points you make in the film, Kevin, is that it's about those who live here who have to make the difference, not folks coming in and trying to make a difference. News that the Green Impact Zone may not be getting enough funding, or the end of its federal funding is coming. Careful balance between you need these city services, yet you have to rely on your own neighborhood.
Yeah, and I agree too with Chris. We really only focus on what Troost, the trouble of Troost in the first 5 minutes of the film, and then we move to the people that are actually working to transform it.
I was going to say it's a great film. I'd highly recommend it. It's premiering this tonight at 7:30 at Screenland Crossroads, with showings through Sunday, December 9th. It's a director is Kevin Bryce. Thank you very much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you.
And Carol Grimaldi is executive director of Brush Creek Community Partners, and Rodney Knott is executive director at Reengage Incorporated. Rodney, Carol, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.